Are we recording? We're recording.
Ooh. We are recording. What's up, Mentality Monsters listeners? Happy New Year. Fedja and I were just sitting here thinking about the year that was 2021, as so many of us have. Thinking about the year in sports, the year for us personally, the year culturally. And the question that came to mind for me is, what did I learn in 2021? So, and I'd love to hear from you, man. What did you learn in 2021?
I'm pulling up all of my notes because I haven't actually thought about this yet.
An apropos response from Fedja, as I've known him since fourth grade, somewhere in there. There's a profound answer in a huge compilation of notes.
Yeah, I pride myself on being able to send people summaries of books that they could read in 10 minutes and basically get the whole gist through the lens of the things Fedja cares about the most. But yeah, one of the main things I did in 2021 was I read a lot. So I also tracked the exact number of books I read because I was curious about how many I could do. So I read 26 books, which is the most I've ever read in a year. My wife read 209.
Yeah, it's pretty wild. I also broke a personal 10. Yeah, hey, that's incredible. I also had a record reading year in 2021. And the one thing I would say that really enhanced it and reduced the total number that I could have read was implementing so much of the stuff that I was reading as I was reading it, literally putting it down and saying, I'm going to write about this or do the thing I'm reading about. I read a lot of Jeffrey Gitomer's books, Get Shit Done, which is his newest book. You know, reading it and seeing some of the ways that he sets up his day, I just say to myself, okay, time to write this out for myself. And so, yeah, I read about a book a month, and my favorite one was Green Lights by Matthew McConaughey.
Yeah, you talk about that one a ton.
Yeah, which I listen to because, you know, if you have the option to have Matthew McConaughey read it to you instead of reading it yourself, you take that option.
I read a lot about, I'm looking at my list here. I read a ton of books about communication and persuasion, and implementing that stuff was really satisfying because one of the motivations that I had for reading about that stuff was I was going to look for a new job, and I got a new job. And then I've been told at my new job, which I've been at for about 5 months now, that one of my biggest strengths as a contributor is my ability to communicate clearly and concisely and to effectively organize and build alignment around all of these different groups that are involved in the things that we do. So that to me was a big validation of my ability to implement the things I learned. I also read a ton about just general like psychology and ways of thinking, which I think was really cool to try to implement. One of the best things I learned about this year was mental models. And those
cool books. Like,
profoundly changed the way I approach everything that I do on such a level that one of the things that I always talk about is the idea of positioning. So it's really important to put yourself in positions that allow you to maximize the number of good outcomes and minimize the number of bad outcomes. And I talk about it so much that now my wife is framing things to me in terms of positioning, which is both a good and bad thing because,
you know,
she's picking up what I'm putting down, but also now she's using my judo against me, and that can be scary.
And to give the audience some context on mental models, the books present the notion that your life is also dictated by some set of natural laws, like science and nature work the same way as the outcomes that you're looking for in your fitness or your job, right? Like velocity, right? If you have speed and direction, specific goal and you take action on things frequently, you'll get there a lot faster than if you had, you know, just arbitrary speed, right? So that's one scientific concept, and I enjoyed reading those books as well. Really blew through them. It was about a year ago now, January. Those are my first ones of the year. Blew through the first two volumes pretty quickly.
Yeah, the books that Kyle's talking about are they're called The Great Mental Models by Farnham Street. And Farnham Street is a blog that's dedicated to figuring out how to be a better decision maker. And so the concept is that you are using these laws of nature as like scaffolding that you build around your decision-making process that helps you refer to like these concepts that can model what you might be basing your, or what you might be deciding. And then you could predict what the outcome will be like based on how those models tend to predict the outcome will be.
My favorite chapter was about a reference to Bill Walsh and the San Francisco 49ers of the 1980s. And because the system that he developed has been copied so many times and evolved, and it's the basis of the modern NFL offense. And the chapter was about the ability for like a principle to endure over time based on its importance. And the writer was saying that, and this is a cool takeaway, what the great coaches not only copy the plays, they can tell you why they work and why they work situationally. They understand the whole picture. I thought that was really interesting because we live in a copycat world, and without diving in and looking at the story behind why you're doing what you're doing, its utility is only so limited.
I don't remember that.
Yeah.
Part of the book. Was that in the first one?
I think it was in the second one.
The second one was a lot longer than the first one. So there was a lot. I'm looking through the notes right now that I have.
Yeah. Lombardi was the guy who, the author of Mental Models, made a reference to a book written by Michael Lombardi about this. And that was what he referenced.
There are a couple other concepts that I loved. Circle of competence was awesome. So it's all about like, what are you best at? And then where's the boundary between what you're best at versus what you're not best at? And then understanding how to expand that boundary or stay within it when you need to, and leave it when you need to. And then how can you get help when you need it? First principles thinking. Yeah. That one is a great one too. So that's the idea that you always boil down everything you're thinking about to the most fundamental element of what it is. So if you understand the foundational pieces of whatever you're trying to decide, then it's easy to evaluate at a high level whether that decision is the right one or the wrong one. Because you're not complicating it with additional ancillary things that are either superfluous or like just not going to be the primary drivers of whether that decision is successful or unsuccessful. That one is probably the most important one, I think, from all of the models that I read about, because when you think about things in first principle terms, you start to simplify everything around you. And then when you combine that with something called the Feynman technique, which is a way of teaching someone something. So you learn a topic and then you figure out how to explain it to someone as if they're a fifth grader. Like that's you teaching someone something in terms of its first principles. Now you get really good at simplifying subjects and getting people to understand what you're saying in a way that enables them to quickly grasp it and run with it. And you know, either agree with you or disagree with you in a meaningful way. Simplifying your vocabulary is also a big way to boost. Like you should always only talk with a fifth to eighth grade vocabulary because our education system is not that great.
The way that I looked at and received the First Principles Thinking chapter was interestingly different in that I looked at it as a foundational principle for selling. If someone's going to buy this, why do they want to buy it? Okay, they want to, if it's an advertising tool, they want to reach more audience. Why do they want to reach more audience? And then once you hit five whys, you can understand really what's driving the decision-making there. And then once you understand what's really just driving the decision-making, you can move that person from latent pain to active pain with the ideas that you present in the call. It's like, well, did you know you would be missing out on X, Y, and Z? Or you could get access to this, which saves you from this other thing happening and creates some active pain, like where they're in a state of lack. So I think about the first principles from a storytelling perspective and a sales perspective and intercommunication.
Yeah, I got to say, I was really pleasantly surprised with myself for how much I was able to read and what I was able to learn from that. So much so that I have, and this is something that's so fascinating too. So take one of the mental models of the idea of consistency is another big one that that Farnham Street always talks about. And you could get books on mental models that are not written by Farnham Street. There are many different types, and there are a lot of podcasts about like optimizing yourself that talk about this almost to an insufferable degree. And I guess we are now one of those as well.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, if you're going to pick one, pick us. That being said, it's a very saturated market. Like there was one, I was listening to it in the car on the way to my last trip to the airport. It's called The Skinny Confidential. And it's like a couple that just talk about these different personal development concepts. And they have some really incredible guests on. One guest was a baron in the breathwork industry, which wasn't even a thing like 6 months ago. And it was a really fascinating episode. And I'm just thinking to myself, who is the target audience for this podcast? But something my fiance knew about, and we listened to it. It was quite interesting. So there's certainly no shortage of advice for optimization.
So what I learned, going back to what I started talking about, what I learned is that I set out at the beginning of the year to learn about persuasion and communication, and through simple consistency, so like waking up every day at 5 a.m. and reading for an hour and a half and taking notes and reviewing those notes, and actively practicing what I was learning, I was able to become a better communicator and become more persuasive, especially in like a professional environment. The same thing, I then shifted in the back half of the year towards like mindset, some psychological and philosophical principles, as well as like skill development, like general skill development. And again, the same thing revealed itself to me was that with consistency, I was able to pick up and do these things and implement these things fairly well. Obviously, I want to continue to improve, but what it showed me was that like being consistent in anything that I do is going to produce results over time. It's just a matter of having the patience to be able to acknowledge those results as they happen in the small day-to-day activities that you do, and then having the wherewithal to look back and reflect on them and say like, oh, look at where I was at the beginning of this journey and where I am now.
It's a powerful takeaway, my friend.
Yeah, that's probably the biggest thing I learned this past year. I also learned that being a Browns fan and having expectations is never a good combination in any capacity. So I've given up on American football.
Yeah, I'm a Giants fan, so
I know how you feel.
I'm in a terrible place right now.
Hell,
oh my God. I've been there. It's awful.
What happened?
I always thought the Giants sold their soul to the devil to get Eli Manning. It was a thought I had like when they got him. I was like, man, we just sold our soul to the devil. And then when they won the first Super Bowl, it was like, yeah, definitely deal with the devil. Like Tom Brady, undefeated, did it. Did it again. And you're just like, man, we are we are playing with God here. And when he left and it was over, I was like, I just had a terrible sinking feeling. And they are literally the worst team in the NFL. No doubt.
They
can't even catch a kickoff.
Dude, I the thing you have to hope for is that they don't become consistently bad. Talk about consistency again. The Browns finished in last place in their division 16 out of 23 years since they returned to the NFL.
Yeah, I think the Giants are already there. They're the losingest team in the NFL since 2017, and it's 2022. So we're halfway to a decade.
That is bad.
Yeah.
Do you think Joe Judge is the real deal?
I held out hope. I almost admired the hire because it was out of the box. It was like, okay, I see what they did here. And there was going to be a commitment. And he just went up there after the last game and gave a 10-minute post-game rant that in 30 years, people will look back and say that was the worst press conference given in the NFL in the last
I heard years. About that. What did he I didn't watch it, so I have no context for it, but I read that he was saying things like, oh, I get so many texts from other players that are getting paid more elsewhere that they would love to be back on the Giants.
Yeah, well, so first off, he did several things that, you know, we talk about communication, really rubbed me the wrong way. Number one, he said he's only focused on the next game and the next week. But apparently he knows what players are pending free agents that tell him they want to stay. Like, I thought you were only focused on next week. But so that didn't align. Secondly, he said that he refused to come up to the podium after games and put players on blast because that's what cowards do. Okay, so yeah, when I refuse to pick dinner and I defer to my partner, well, you can always pick dinner. And then in the next argument, I say, well, I always let you pick dinner. That means I'm really actually resentful that I never get to pick dinner.
And so a coward.
So by telling me that you're not doing that, you really want to do that.
Yeah.
And the players can see through that. They can see through it. Like, he's basically saying, hey, I'm doing you guys a favor. I'm not putting you on blast publicly. And who knows what he's saying behind closed doors, but if you look at the results, like they say in the NFL, the eye in the sky don't lie. And they are melting down. I mean, my God. I don't know if it's more him or the fact that they know they're going out there with a quarterback that can literally only throw for 40 yards per game.
Yeah, Glennon.
Which I am confident that I could exceed 40 yards passing in an NFL game. If you just called screen passes and I just literally threw it to the running back every play, I think I could hit 40 yards. Like, that's really hard.
Yeah, and like to be an NFL QB and not be able to hit like a 5-yard slant
like
five times a game, you know, and one of them go over 10 yards.
Yeah, it's not right. There's so much not right with them, and I understand the roster and the injuries, but I mean, every team's got injuries, man. It's, you know, players out with COVID, and that's part of what's made the NFL uninteresting to me this year is that they just don't care about the competitive integrity of the game, and they basically told us as much by allowing, you know, the rules around who can play when based on the player health. It got to a ridiculous point to me. So I haven't enjoyed it.
I mean, what else are they going to do? Right? Like, you got to.
Well, they treated Aaron Rodgers differently. They knew that he wasn't vaccinated, and they just let him go with another set of rules because he is who he is. It's like, okay, so where does that stop? Right? Do you, because Sean Payton wore a clown shirt once, do you not throw a clear pass interference against their team, you know, in the NFC Championship game to keep him? Like, when does it end? It's like, well, we don't like that Sean Payton made fun of Goodell, so we're going to conveniently leave them out of the Super Bowl. Like, where does it stop? They showed you they don't care. And there's an element of theater to that, which I respect. But at the same time.
The Rodgers thing, I think, is a separate issue than the recent changes that they made.
It is, totally. And the Rodgers one is the one I have the issue with, really.
Yeah, it is tough. It is so tough because he, like, I think the thing that made it the most frustrating was that he knowingly lied. He played a victim after he got found out. So he's like,
correct.
He's like, pretending to be, he's pretending to follow the rules and then is like crying to everyone when he gets caught for not following the rules.
Yep.
And then
he blamed a reporter for asking a misleading question. Yeah. Come on, dude. Come on.
And then from the, on the NFL's side, like, yeah, I mean, you're right. They clearly showed like, hey, we're not, you know, cause they could have suspended him further after he was eligible to come back, but they didn't.
And this doesn't even get into the fact that the league was clearly upset that a probe was done into the Washington football team's emails. And they were like, okay, we're going to let this leak out about John Gruden. We're just going to launch a nuke.
Yeah. At the Raiders. Ruined a dude's career.
And which was totally justified. His position was untenable as a leader of men in 2021, 2022. I get that 100%. But the league was like, yeah, you know what? Let's just launch a nuclear missile at one of our teams. That report tears up the whole league. But you know what? We're done with the Raiders. We don't like John Gruden. Like, come on, all this stuff is just so ridiculous.
Yeah, you gotta, it makes you think, like, what are they working so hard to protect?
Yeah, exactly. There's just.
And this whole, I think ultimately what it is that it's an old boys club.
Yep.
And they got it good. Like, the boys got it real good. And anyone that can hop into that old boys club and cross that boundary, it's like becoming a made man in the mafia, you know, and
being an NFL owner. Yep. And being in the inner circle in the brass
even ring. Being in the owner's inner circle and like getting into that front office and everything like that. Cause you think about it, like the people in the front office are the one, they're like the deep state, you know, like they're the ones that they're there for a long time. You know, you get in the right position, you're not changing every position in the front office with every regime change. No, you're doing like a couple of changes up at the top in key positions, but most of those people that sit in the background, they stay the same and they probably know a lot of stuff and want to preserve that, you know, honeypot that they have. I'm starting to think that the NFL is a good little allegory for just the US government in general now.
I've been to team sites and looked at like the scouting department and all that stuff, and it'll be like, you know, some guy who's been the director of college scouting for like the last 20 years. That's like the guy who owns the laundromat in like Rutherford, New Jersey, that Sopranos do their laundry at.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, okay, cool.
Generally speaking, I agree with you that a lot of the game itself sucks. The game itself is significantly more boring than it was, you know, 5-10 years ago. And I think it's because for me, you never feel like the defense even has a chance. And the other thing that you said that was really profound was like, regard like the Kansas City Chiefs, like how could a team just decide not to play defense for the first 3 months of the season and then be like, oh, now we're going to turn it on? Like they were giving up 35 points a game at one point.
Yeah, like, yeah. Fedger and I were talking offline. I was like, I'm not such a huge fan of a league where literally the best team outside of the Packers, odds-on favorite to get to the Super Bowl in the AFC. Was giving up 35 points a game for 11 weeks until Thanksgiving. They didn't know how to play defense. Like, that's wild. And the fact that you have no chance. Like, the 06 Bears with Rex Grossman will never happen again.
Yeah.
You have no – I wouldn't even go so far as to say that the 2012 Ravens couldn't happen again with an average – with a quarterback of Joe Flacco's caliber. Like, go to the championship games the last half century. Give me the four quarterbacks. 2018, Blake Bortles might have been the one, like, exception, the Jaguars roster, and they couldn't hold it together.
And it's because you can't – right. You can't get in a track meet and, you know, the 5-yard cushion and all of the holding and the pass interference, yeah, and like all of these things that are intended to allow teams to score more points. Like, it's not fun when every game is 49-42.
Yeah. No, like, I view the same, like, you know, the Chiefs were kind of like the Warriors. When the Warriors came out, it was like, oh my God, they're like 73-9, 72-9. I'm like, yeah, it's kind of boring. Like, they never miss a three. Third and 15, Mahomes would drop back. Hill runs a clear out, and Kelsey runs a post, either in corner or post. And
that's the fundamental thing. The thing that makes it boring is not the individual physical feat, because every time I see Tyreek Hill run across the field at like 90 miles an hour, I am going to be blown away. Every time I see Steph Curry hit a ridiculous three, I'm going to be blown away. It's the idea that it's the hedonic treadmill. So humans, you know, when we find something new, we immediately find a way to get bored with it. You know, you buy a new car, a week later, it's just a car again. It's not that source of joy that you had when you first bought it. And this happens psychologically. Like, this is something that happens in everyone's brain. And what it is that the vehicle to produce those results is the same thing over and over and over again. Like, every time Tyreek Hill catches a 90-yard bomb, he pretty much just runs the same route from the left side of the field, you know, 30 yards across to the right side of the field.
An exaggerated drag route.
Right. Like
a deep drag.
Every single time that Steph Curry hits a three, it's on a pick and roll. So it's just like you're basically playing 2-on-2 basketball. And I watched I went to Montana earlier this year. One of the other things I learned this year is that, given I couldn't travel internationally, like, national parks are the things that are available to people in this country are just like unbelievable. Yeah. But anyway, we went to Montana.
Countries within this country.
Yeah. We went to Montana, and I was watching the Dallas Mavericks versus, I think it was the LA Clippers. At that point, I believe it was a playoff game because this was in May. And I shit you not, it looked like two groups of untalented old men playing basketball in an LA Fitness. Like, just... I'm serious. Like, Dallas inbounded the ball, ran down, shot a three, brick. LA picked it up, ran down full court, shot a three, brick. Dallas then picked it up, ran down full court, shot a three. This is like literally how I used to play basketball when I was in high school or like post college. When you would go to the park and like three people would hang back because they were too tired to run. They would just run back and keep going, jacking up these threes. It's fascinating to me that like teams can average 35 points a game and give up 30 points a game and still be considered good. It's fascinating to me that like defense has become so hard to play that a cornerback like Trevon Diggs on Dallas, who allows the most yards per catch of any corner, but leads the league in interceptions. Like, he is considered good because pretty much the only way you can play corner now is by gunning for interceptions. Because if you breathe on a receiver, you get called for pass interference.
Right.
It's fascinating, man. Like, I've never found myself less interested in an NFL season in my life. And,
Rashad Jennings used to play running back for the Giants and before that the Raiders. He posted like throwback Thursday picture of when he was undrafted and like made the team with the Raiders. And it was like an article about him making a team. There's a picture of him running with the ball, and there was a linebacker chasing him. And I was like, the people in that photo are twice as big as the players now. I'm like, oh my God, the linebacker chasing him had to be 260.
Yeah, dude.
Like, he was huge. And like Jennings too. I was like, geez, dude was huge. Like, you just, the players are, it's a totally different game. It's a totally different game. And you touched on something about the 3-point shots and the heat, the hedonic treadmill. That, here's the thing. One thing I learned in 2021, you know what? I rescind that. I didn't learn it this year. I admitted it this year. Soccer is my favorite sport because a goal is such an achievement. The amount of relief that a team displays on the field when they get it. Like, I want a sport that has that. And the other thing too, that's great about it is there's a movement within the sport to promote play that's also attractive to watch. Managers and media pan teams that park the bus. Like, they just put all their players behind the ball and like basically make it like 11 goalies.
Mm-hmm. Greece. You're describing Greece.
Yeah. And this gets, it's so, and the players don't buy into it. Like, players don't want to play for teams that do that. Coaches that do that are not respected. And there's a movement to like play an attractive game. And I'm like, okay, this is something I can get behind. And I've also come to accept the system of serfdom that exists in the hierarchy of soccer, where a team that may be totally undermanned will still throw everything at it to win a game, because it'd be like a historic feat for that, you know, like, yeah, Burnley to beat Man City. It's like, that's their Super Bowl. So the hard thing about winning a title for Man City isn't beating the other teams. It's going up against the other team's literal Super Bowl every week.
Yeah.
And I love this. I can't get enough of it.
And being consistent with that performance over the course of months. You know, it's not just about one game or getting a couple of bounces go your way. I mean, I've always loved soccer. I watched it with my family growing up because we would watch the Croatian teams play and all that stuff. I've never felt more proud of a team than I have the U.S. men's soccer team. Like,
yeah, just, man, I'm excited about the
feeling of
men.
Them getting good is awesome.
Ricardo Pepi just went to Germany.
That's the feeder. That's the feeder system for us. Dude, I agree. I think the other thing that's fascinating to me about soccer is, soccer has its own problems, like the corruption and all that stuff too. But 100%. When you get on the field, even if you're like a Lionel Messi, like the best player in the world, and you're this like god on the soccer field, there's only so much you can do with that talent because of the structure of the game. Like, it still requires everyone to work together to create that goal. You can't just have one dude own another. And American football, like, there's so many factors that, like, with between scheme and the throw, the catch, the run, like all these different things that you can outsmart your opponent in so many different ways that you can take like a pretty average dude and like scheme them open. And if your scheme is good enough and the defense is forced to play back enough, like, dude, what are you going to do?
Yeah. What I love about, I mean, this list can go on. Another thing I love about soccer is you'll often hear a single personality trait get associated with a team's performance. Like, we were timid today. And that collective energy permeates the team. Like, 11 players were simultaneously timid.
Yeah.
Or they were aggressive or brave. You know, whatever that word is that characterizes the unit, that they go in with that. And that there's a dictator of that energy within the team. It's very fascinating for me in that, yes, there are games that it is like watching paint dry when you have two timid teams or one that's totally behind the ball and doesn't care about even scoring. They just want to stop you from getting near their goal. Yes, it can be boring. And man, there are some games that it's fantastic. The World Cup this year, like I said, I'm looking forward to it, man. The U.S. has a lot of promise.
I am they officially qualified, right?
No.
No. When did
they No qualify? One has officially qualified from their region yet.
Mm. Is it because it's too close? Like the points differential between all of them?
So yeah, they don't do a group setting like Europe does. It's everybody's in a huge bracket and they play it out till March. So
yeah, no, well they do CONCACAF, they do like the full bracket first and then they reduce it down to like the top eight teams, and then those top eight teams have to play amongst each other, right?
No, the top three in CONCACAF, well yeah, it does go from a larger number to a smaller. I think the smaller number is eight, and then they round robin that. Four make it, but the fourth spot plays another federation in a playoff. Like it could be Australia. I think it's like an Asian federation, yeah, which Australia is a part of. And fourth place would have to beat that team. So the top three for sure make it.
Oh, the US is in second place with 15 points.
Yeah, the US is in a good position. They're in a good position.
Canada is first. That sucks.
Yep. Canada has the best player in CONCACAF.
Yeah, the what's his name?
He's Alphonso Davies.
Yeah. Is he really that good?
Yeah, they call him the Roadrunner because his speed is unreal. He's a cheat code as a defender because he plays so far up the field. He's an offensive player, but mm-hmm. if the other player gets the ball, he can catch them immediately with no effort.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Very interesting. Yeah, I watched their game against Canada. Davies was good, but it seems like he has to do it all on his own.
Yeah, with the national team, he was the reason they scored. We were watching it together when they played Canada. He was the reason that they scored. He just blew by everyone and crossed an easy goal. So
next game, U.S. plays El Salvador on the 27th.
Yep. I think is that home or away? Is that they're away to Canada after that?
It's in January. Yeah, it's home. Yeah. And so the 30th is against Canada, and I guess that's going to be the deciding game.
Well, the winner of that is a virtual lock. I mean, I don't know if it's formally.
The funniest thing about CONCACAF is that all the other countries in it are so poor that they can't implement VAR.
Replay, yeah.
See, the other thing I like about soccer is that they did VAR right. Like, you can. Why? What do you?
This is a whole discussion for another day. You know what?
You don't think so?
I love the fact that it's there. I think they've done it right in international competitions. In club, it is a terrible mess.
Really?
Because
why is that? I only watch international, so that's why I would think probably that it's done well.
Yeah, because the referee wants to make a decision that fits. This is my belief. No, this is not a fact. The referee's always going to want to make a decision that fits the spirit of the game. Like early on, this past week, a Liverpool player, first kick of the ball, jumps, elbows a Chelsea player in the eye. And it was real. Like it wasn't a flop. Like dude elbowed him in the eye. 5 seconds into the game, the ref doesn't want to send him off and have 10v11 for 90 minutes. The crowd doesn't even pay for that. They pay for 11v11. And you want, and you're the ref, you're like, oh God, I can't send someone off 5 seconds in. So it's like, okay, they take another look at it. And it's like, look, I'm just not going to do it. But then that same thing happens 40 minutes in and they send them off. And they're like, well, where's the consistency? It's like, well, you have to consider the situation. So in international, I think the tournament is so small and it's so over such a short period. I think they would make that decision. And they would be like, look, it's too important of a game. In the Premier League, it's like, look, there's 38 matches in a season. This is one of those 38. If you're playing three matches in a group or a single elimination, and you give somebody a black eye in the fifth minute, you're getting sent off. Like, it's too important.
The only thing I don't like about the VAR is when they make those millimeter...
The offsides. Oh, my God. It's horrifying.
Those things are so stupid. Where they draw like a red line from the tip of some dude's penis to like the knee of the defender. And they're like, well, nope, he was offsides.
Yeah, it's terrible.
Yeah.
And the other thing too is they let the runs go through when they're clearly offsides, thinking, well, we'll just go to replay. It's like, well, hold on a second. You're one-on-one with the keeper. What if the keeper sacrifices his soul and blows out that striker's knee?
Yeah.
Sliding, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, right. You're just allowing a dangerous one-on-one to happen when he's clearly offside. Just blow the whistle.
Keeper just decks the guy in the face with an arm.
Yeah, it's like
right hook, like, right to the nose.
He can't see. The keeper cannot see whether the guy's onside or not from his angle, because he's looking at him perpendicular, not horizontally.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
He's like, eh, see you later, knees. Like,
ugh. Yeah, I don't know. I think it's at least done a little better, or a lot better than the instant replay was handled in the NFL at like a high level.
Yeah, I agree.
I will say though that for like generally speaking, it's probably a lot easier to officiate soccer than it is to officiate the NFL.
Because I think so too, because you're literally considered a member of the game as an official.
In soccer. Like, in soccer?
Yeah, like you are part of the game.
And you don't think, well, I was coming at it from the angle of like the things develop more slowly in soccer versus at football. Like you have these guys running at like 25 miles an hour at each other and you have to determine whether he grabbed the dude's hip or like didn't swing him or whatever.
The involvement of equipment too, like, you know, did he grab a face mask? Yeah. Stuff like that. It is more difficult to officiate. Like, you have to be able to concentrate for 8 seconds, 160 times over a 3-hour span.
Yeah.
And pay attention to like hyper details. And by the way, the NFL doesn't employ officials full time. Part time gig only, folks. Part time only.
And you're not allowed to take back anything.
Yeah.
Once you make the call, it's the call. I was very disappointed with the NFL season this year. I think overall,
you know what?
I don't know what it was. I'm just apathetic towards it.
Behind closed doors, I think they would tell you the same thing. Look at this final week. They were like, we're going to put 6 games on national TV, 2 on Saturday, 3 on Sunday. Probably more than 3. Probably have 4 of them on Sunday. Look at them. Okay, Saturday, Chiefs, Broncos. Broncos are eliminated. Chiefs are locked into a seed. They're not going to get the 1. The night game, Philly, Dallas. They're both in, and neither's getting a bye. They might rest people. Sunday, the only game that's an outstanding, you must watch is Chargers, Raiders, because the winner gets in.
Yeah.
The rest of it, there's one other one that's kind of interesting, which is 49ers-Rams, because the 49ers have had the Rams number, and if they win, they get in the playoffs, and the Rams blow the division. So that's an interesting game. The other, 10 games, they're not interesting.
Yeah, Bengals are going to rest people against the Browns.
Yeah. Because, okay, so here's what the NFL did, morons. Like, hey, you know what? To combat tanking, we're going to add a playoff spot so that every team has hope until like 3 weeks left. So what we're going to do is dock a good team a reward of a bye week and give a playoff spot to a garbage team. Oh, so now that only one team can get a bye, all the other teams that clinched a berth, because there's so many spots now, it's easy to clinch, but we're just going to create our own fucking bye week and not play anyone.
Yeah.
Idiots.
I mean, it was 100% a money thing too. Like the same way that the 18-week season is a money thing. Like, they just want to keep pumping dollars.
100%. You know?
They don't make money on the preseason, so they might as well fit more into the regular season and just make it rain. I do think your point about, you know, teams, it being easier for the good teams to clinch, so they'll create their own bye week at the end of the season, is a great point. I mean, yeah, 100%. I agree with that completely. And
like in the NFC, it was clear for the last 6 weeks that an 8-9 team was going to make it in the last spot. So like if you're Dallas or you're the Cardinals, you've lost 3 or 4 in a row, you're not even sweating. You're like, we'll get it right. Like, we're in no danger of anything, you know, happening here. So I think they got it right. All wrong.
The only solution to that is that you have more teams be more competitive. Because, you know, if there are more teams that are able to take that seventh spot, it's a really good source of drama. But then again, to your point, like for that seventh spot, it's drama between a bunch of shitty teams. It's not drama between a bunch of good teams. So no one really cares. And the fans of those teams know that they have no chance unless, like, you know, any given Sunday, that chaos that they say is possible, but not really, especially now that everything is dependent on the quarterback.
Like this Sunday night was a perfect example. Billed as a division rivalry, Vikings, Packers, Vikings playoffs. Are you kidding me? Those teams are not in the same stratosphere. It was unwatchable.
Yeah.
The Vikings players knew they were undermanned. They were running half a route out there. And this is their Sunday night product. They're rolling this out to you like this is the greatest thing ever. It just doesn't work.
Steelers-Browns was just as disappointing. You had Ben Roethlisberger in the first half threw 34 times for 100 yards.
Sounds like the last 5 years for him.
Dude, I don't know. Like, it wasn't even like a good, you know, sometimes you get into these defensive battles and you're like, hell yeah, the defense is pounding it. The other defense is pounding it. Like, we're getting this like tight, like rough classic football match. In this case, it was only that because the offense has sucked so much. And that's the crazy thing is like, man, it's so tough because the game molded into something that's so quarterback driven that if you don't have a quarterback, you literally cannot do anything. No. Like the Browns have one of the best offensive lines in the NFL.
Well, the Browns have a completely stacked roster across
the board. The best running back in the NFL, amongst the best. They have the best running back room total. They have three solid tight ends, right? Like, how is this team not able to do anything simply because their quarterback is a disappointment? Right. Like,
and the Browns defense is hampered by the fact that opponents go into the game knowing that every play is available to them because their opponent's not going to score 28 points.
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
So like the Browns defense is stacked personnel wise too. You wouldn't really point to any areas. I mean, okay. Yeah, maybe like linebacker or another safety, but I mean,
I think defensive tackle is their biggest weakness on defense because they get gutted up the middle.
You're still splitting hairs here, though. Like, that's not like a, you know, I'm sure the Chiefs or the Packers could say the same thing, and they're a Super Bowl team. But with the Browns, it's like, well, look, we're not, every play is available to us. We're under no pressure to, you know, do anything. And then it's like, well, now we have to gamble on defense. You know, we got to play more man. We got to blitz more. And it's like more penalties when you play man. Guys get wide open sometimes and you give up an 80-yard touchdown. It's like, our defense sucks. It's like, well, everybody's defense sucks. Honestly.
Yeah, that's a whole other like whirlwind conversation we could have.
100%.
About fucking Baker Mayfield.
I want to close on three things I learned in 2021. One is to let go of things and the application of that. And this was a great conversation because I was an NFL nut and I've really let go of my attachment to that, to trade my Sundays for things that are more satisfying for me at this point in my life. Secondly, I would say the expression of gratitude, and I'm such a coffee junkie. No, I wouldn't say that. I do drink a large coffee every morning. Some people go way beyond that, like way beyond that. And I realized I was only drinking like it with a half of the senses available to me. Like I would maybe taste it because I was chugging it. And I was like, do I even smell it? Like, do I look at it? Because sometimes it's really attractive to look at, like the way the milk like goes. And I was like, time to drink this with all my senses. And that's how I know I'm expressing gratitude, is like going through my day, really experiencing everything with all senses available to me. And again, this conversation, you know, aligned with that, because some of my interests have changed to things that are more experiential. Like, yes, I want to watch a soccer match which has a risk of being utterly boring or absolutely cracking. And that is something I'm grateful, because that's life. You know, that's Monday through Friday. It could be any range of those things. You know, the NFL is like drinking Mountain Dew every day. It's like, oh, it's a lot of excitement. It's a lot of sugar, a lot of passing yards. Now I'm like sick over it. I don't want to drink any more Mountain Dew. And lastly is to listen to the body when you're feeling stress or you're feeling different things, and take advantage of that. And we titled this episode the Postmodern Water Cooler Talk, because a lot of us millennials are missing out on the water cooler. We don't go to the office. We work remotely, which is a thing of beauty. And this is the type of stuff we would talk about at the water cooler: sports, entertainment. And the one thing we're replacing is a lot of the bitching that might go on, a lot of the victim mentality that would go on amongst people at the water cooler. We're replacing that with productive, insightful, and fun things that we learned that people can apply to life. And that's really the ethos of our podcast moving forwards. So if you're down with that, please like, please subscribe, follow on YouTube, we're on iTunes, we're on Spotify, tell a friend, and have a great 2022.